I spent the last 2 years of high school in a daze, locking away the questions that life seemed insistent on posing. I kept playing basketball, attended classes sparingly, drank beer heavily, and tried drugs enthusiastically. I discovered that it didn't make any difference whether you smoked reefer in the white classmate's sparkling new van, or in the dorm room with some brother you'd met down at the gym, or on the beach with a couple of Hawaiian kids who had dropped out of school and now spent most of their time looking for an excuse to brawl. Nobody asked you whether your father was a fat cat executive who cheated on his wife, or some laid-off Joe who slapped you around whenever he bothered to come home. You might just be bored, or alone. Everybody was welcome into the club of disaffection. And if the high didn't solve whatever it was that was getting you down, it could at least help you laugh at the world's ongoing folly and see through all the hypocrisy and bullshit and cheap moralism. That's how it had seemed to me then, anyway. It had taken a couple of years before I saw how fates were beginning to play themselves out, the difference that color and money made after all, and who survived, how soft or hard the landing when you finally fell. I tried to explain some of this to my mother once, the role of luck in the world, the spin of the wheel. It was at the start of my senior year in high school. She was back in Hawaii, her field work completed, and one day she marched into my room, wanting to know the details of my friend Pablo's recent arrest. I'd given her a reassuring smile and patted her hand and told her not to worry. I wouldn't do anything stupid. It was usually an effective tactic, another one of those tricks I had learned. People were satisfied so long as you were courteous and smiled and made no sudden moves. They were more than satisfied. They were relieved. Such a pleasant surprise to find a well-mannered young black man who didn't seem angry all the time. Except my mother hadn't looked satisfied. She had just sat there, studying my eyes, her face as grim as a hearse. "Don't you think you're being a little casual about your future?" she said. "What do you mean?" "You know exactly what I mean. One of your friends was just arrested for drug possession. Your grades are slipping. You haven't even started on your college applications. Whenever I try to talk to you about it, you act like I'm just this great big bother." I didn't need to hear all this. It wasn't like I was flunking out. I started to tell her how I'd been thinking about maybe not going away for college, how I could stay in Hawaii and take some classes and work part-time. She cut me off before I could finish. "I could get into any school in the country," she said, "if I just put in a little effort. Remember what that's like? Effort? Damn it, Bear, you can't just sit around like some good-time Charlie waiting for luck to see you through." I looked at her sitting there, so earnest, so certain in her son's destiny. The idea that my survival depended on luck remained a heresy to her. She insisted on assigning responsibility somewhere, to herself, to Gramps and Toot, to me. I suddenly felt like puncturing that certainty of hers, letting her know that her experiment with me had failed. Instead of shouting, I laughed. "A good time, Charlie, huh? Well, why not? Maybe that's what I want out of life. I mean, look at Gramps. He didn't even go to college." The comparison caught my mother by surprise. Her face went slack, her eyes wavered. It suddenly dawned on me her greatest fear. "Is that what you're worried about?" I asked her. "That I'll end up like Gramps?" She shook her head quickly. "You're already much better educated than your grandfather," she said. But the certainty had finally drained from her voice. Instead of pushing the point, I stood up and left the room.